In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, September 29th, 2014. And I'm very glad to be joined today by Larry Reed. Larry Reed is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org, F-E-E.org. Before becoming FEE's president in 2008, he served for 20 years as president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Midland, Michigan. He was also a full-time economics professor at Northwood University in Michigan. He was the department chairman there in the early 1980s. And as a freelance journalist, this guy has been all over the place. He's been to 81 countries on six continents. He's reported on hyperinflation in South America. He's reported on black markets from behind the Iron Curtain. He's reported on reforms and repression in China and in Cambodia. He's reported on civil war inside Nicaragua and Mozambique. He's been everywhere. And right now, he's spending a little bit of time here with us. Larry Reed, welcome to the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Tom. Thank you for having me.
I want to do a little institutional history for the listeners today. We do a lot of history on this show, but sometimes we need to do the history of our own movement to know where we've been and where we're going. And the Foundation for Economic Education, of which you are the current president, played such a critical role in developing the libertarian movement, free market economics. It really was the only game in town in the mid-40s when it got started. What was the climate of opinion like? What was intellectual life like in America on the eve of the creation of FEE?
Well, it was at a low point. There's no question about that. Although World War II was behind us and victorious for the Western Allies, there was a sense across the Western world that, big government just saved us, and central planning is a great idea, and just wonderful things can be accomplished if we just put government in charge. So the defense of liberty was confined to a few people here and there who didn't have much voice, who didn't get much attention, and it was in that very negative climate that Leonard Reed, the founder of FEE, decided to mount an intellectual counteroffensive.
Now, let's say something about Leonard Reed, who, of course, his last name is spelled R-E-A-D, and you are R-E-E-D. Who was Leonard Reed? I think most of us know of Leonard Reed as the man who founded the Foundation of Economic Education, but what had he been doing before that?
Leonard was a businessman. He had run a produce company that he founded in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He was a Michiganian by birth. After that, he moved west to California and headed up several chambers of commerce until finally landing a job as the guy running the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce. And at first, in that job, he was not yet a libertarian by any means. He was sort of a mouthpiece for business that later nagged at him a great deal. And he had a very interesting conversation with a very principled businessman by the name of W.C. Mullendore, who explained to him that his championship of programs, government programs for business, were intellectually unsound, and a far better position was one that advocated for liberty, free markets, a fair field, and no favors. And Leonard took off from there and became a principled libertarian.
What did FEE do in the early days? It published The Freeman, which it continues to publish. But what else did it do? Was it doing the kind of seminars and events that you do for students? What was the outreach? Were they reaching out to students or the general public or what?
It was really the general public because FEE was by itself at that time. It really spoke to anybody who would listen. It didn't really have a targeted audience, so it was speaking through its publications, not just the Freeman, but also a very hefty series of pamphlets that it distributed widely. It was speaking to academics, to students, to business people, you know, really to anybody who wanted an alternative to the prevailing intellectual wisdom, which was in favor of central planning and socialism of various kinds.
You know, Ralph Rako tells a funny story, perhaps you've heard it, about being a young man and being friends with George Riesman, who would go on to become another important free market economist, and they really wanted to meet Ludwig von Mises. And they knew where he lived in New York, but they couldn't think of any pretext for approaching him, so they knocked on his door and pretended they were selling subscriptions to the Freeman. And they asked if he wanted to buy one, and he said, "I already have the Freeman," and he closed the door, and that was the end. But eventually they got invited to Fee to an event where Mises was speaking. So that goes to show the very fact that we associate Mises with Fee indicates that there was tremendous it was a tremendous intellectual powerhouse. It attracted a lot of big names that we associate with the free market movement, who at one time or another spent time at Fee or wrote for the Freeman in the early years. Who are some of these people?
Well, since you mentioned Mises, I certainly should point out that one of the things we are so proud of to this day is that at a time when academia was shunning such luminaries as Ludwig von Mises, Fee was providing them shelter and giving them opportunities to publish. Ludwig von Mises was personally identified very early with Leonard Reed. They were good friends, fellow members of the Mont Pelerin Society of Free Market Economists almost from the beginning. But there were other big names, too, associated with Fee. When Leonard Reed acquired the Freeman, which had been published for a number of years before he took it over, when he took it over as a Fee publication, he hired Frank Chodorov as its first editor under Fee's sponsorship. And Chodorov, of course, was a very bright and articulate defender of individual liberty. Baldy Harper was another early associate of Leonard Reed. Orville Watts and some longtime staff members got their start early on with Leonard. People like Reverend Edmund Opitz, who for all the years he was at Fee, championed the notion that you can be a believer in Christ and be a libertarian at the same time, that there was no incompatibility there. So Leonard gathered some of the finest minds of the libertarian movement, which was quite small then, but there's no question over the years he touched so many people that an awful lot today can say that they trace their origins in this movement for liberty to something that Leonard Reed said, something he wrote, or something that those associated with him early on said or wrote.
Ron Paul makes semi-frequent reference to Leonard Reed and the importance of Leonard Reed in his life. And I think when people talk about Leonard Reed, they're talking not just about his organizational genius and the sacrifices that he made to start Fee, but also the ideas that he had as a thinker in his own right. So what were some of those?
Well, he had a very attractive personality, and it showed up in everything he wrote. Leonard was a practitioner of the kind of soft sell that is intended to attract people of a different persuasion. He was not a fire-breathing, run-em-down, blow-em-up libertarian, although there's certainly a role for that.
Right, yep.
But in the case of Leonard, he advocated this soft sell, which was, you don't beat down somebody's door. You drop a few hints that might appeal to someone and cause them to want to know more about your views. And I think that's very much a part of Leonard, going way back to the very beginning. He often said that when he goes to the golf course, nobody comes up to him to ask, you know, how do you play golf? Instead, they flock around people like the great golfers of his day, Sam Snead and Arnold Palmer. And his point was, you've got to be the best you can be and develop an appealing persona, and the kind of person you want to come to you is not one in anger, but one who says, "Wow, I'm impressed. Tell me more."
That is good advice. And as you say, although there is a role for the fire breather, and sometimes I have stepped into that role, I've also played the role of the Leonard Reed type once in a while, and that does work too. In a way, it kind of depends on the temperament of the person you're appealing to, because some people myself included, won't be reached unless they are basically grabbed by the collar. Look, man, listen to me. But other people do go for the soft sell. You have to sort of get a sense of who your audience is at a given time. Now, today, 2014, here we are. What I guess Fee was it founded in 1946?
Yes.
Okay, so here we are, 68 years on. What's different about Fee today, apart from the geographical location difference? What's different about the mission and the projects of Fee now?
Well, let me start by saying there is one thing that is not different in any way, shape, or form, and that is the fundamental message. We are very proud of the fact we've stayed true to those principles to the letter over the years. But we have become, in recent years, more strategic in our approach. And this is not to knock anything Leonard did, because, as you pointed out, he was almost alone in the early years, willing to speak to anybody. But now that a whole movement has arisen with lots of organizations and people focusing on where they have their greatest strengths, it's been important for Fee to take another look at our role in the movement. Where's the niche to be filled? What's the demographic where we have the greatest unmet needs? We've decided in recent years to focus on the 16 to 24-year-old demographic. Doesn't mean that we don't speak to those in their 60s or 70s, but our focus overwhelmingly is on young people, high school and college students, and homeschool students, but basically that young person demographic. So we have been working to make everything that we do, our publications and our events, comport with that demographic. And more specifically, not just 16 to 24-year-olds, but those within that age group who are relative newcomers to liberty. So if you're someone who says, hey, I've already read Mises and Hayek and so forth, we always say, hey, that's fantastic. We need to connect you with places like the Mises Institute or the Institute for Humane Studies. But our focus is on students who have yet to make up their minds, who are hearing ideas of liberty for the first time. And, of course, we're using technology today in ways that Leonard could not dream of simply because it wasn't available at the time.
Well, how do you get their attention in the first place? Maybe once you have it, you might be able to persuade them, but how do you grab them to begin with?
We're still experimenting and learning as we go along as to the best way to find, identify, and reach these young people who are yet to make up their minds. But one thing we're doing is at our summer seminars, which we have greatly expanded. We did 12 this year in many places across the country with a record number of students. We've tailored each one to a particular theme. For example, one was focused on science, environment, and technology. And the idea there was to attract students who, you know, have that background and intend to go into those areas for their future careers, but maybe have not heard of liberty. And then you talk to them about science and technology and environmental issues, but from a market-friendly perspective with a heavy dose of Austrian economic analysis. And as a result, I think we're taking a lot of students who simply plan to be maybe a scientist or a physicist, but we're now making them educated on ideas of liberty so that they're a pro-liberty scientist or a pro-liberty physicist sometime in the future. And we've done the similar things with arts-minded students, with sports-minded students. We think it's important that a free society have advocates for freedom across all professions, not just within, say, academia or business or the media.
Larry, let's switch gears a bit. You do more public speaking than just about anybody I know, and you speak to a wide array of audiences. Where do you think we have the most work still to go? In other words, what are the fallacies that you see cropping up again and again and again? No matter how much work we seem to put into them, apparently we're not doing quite enough.
Yeah, I think probably the leading one at the moment is the issue of economic inequality.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people out there who say, okay, I can see what you mean when you make the case that capitalism produces the greatest amount of stuff, but I'm bothered by the fact that some people end up with more of it. We have a lot of work to do to explain to people that a free people and a free society are not going to generate equalness in incomes, and we should not lament that fact. We should rejoice in it because it's evidence that people are being the unique individuals that they were created to be. But there's a lot of work there on that issue. Also, I think that, and this is an increasing emphasis at FEE, I think it's important for us to reach people on the issue of character. I think character and liberty are two sides of the same coin, that liberty is the only social, political, economic arrangement that requires that we live to high standards of personal character. And that says a lot for it. I mean, you can be a dirtbag and fit into any socialized arrangement because all that, really, I mean, think of it, all that socialism really demands of you or asks of you is that you cough up your taxes, keep quiet, and go off and give your life on behalf of some cause that whenever the state so directs. But liberty requires that we be honest, that we be patient, courageous, responsible, intellectually humble, recognizing that as much as we know, there's still a universe of knowledge out there that we don't know, and that it's folly to pretend that you can plan an economy for anyone else, let alone a country of 315 million people. So we have to reach people on the character and moral level, as well as the economic level, in dealing with these issues from economic inequality to you name it.
On this character subject, I think it's synergistic, and it works the other way too, that the market in turn can build up moral character because it encourages you to try to prosper by thinking about other people instead of just sitting around and thinking how you can game the system or how you can earn a living on the back of somebody else. You have to think of new and original ways to serve other people. And that, of course, is what the best kind of person does. The best kind of person is focused on how can I take what knowledge I have, what talents I have, and make sure that the whole world is able to benefit from them, even in some small way.
You're absolutely right. It does work in both directions. In fact, without freedom and free markets, how can you possibly exercise your character? How do we know, in fact, that you are a person of character if you've been denied freedom of choice? So it does work in both directions. They're mutually synergistic.
All right. Now, you are the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, which people can visit at fee.org, F-E-E.org. So you are the perfect person to ask a question like this. I'm concerned about the following scenario. We all know that Ron Paul's presidential campaigns brought a lot of young people into these ideas for the first time and generated a lot of enthusiasm for them, and that's great. But Ron's retired now. Mm-hmm. And my concern is we have this enthusiasm, and then every year, little by little, it gets whittled away until we're back right where we were before. How do we stop that from happening?
Well, we've got to make ideas of liberty something that people find positively exciting, motivating, animating, something far bigger than the personality of one figure. We're very proud of the fact that Ron Paul has long been associated with us and was a member of our board of trustees. But he would be the first person to say that this is not a battle of personalities. This is not a battle that depends upon personalities. This is a battle of ideas, and that's what should motivate us. So I think all of us in the liberty movement could probably benefit from thinking about how to more effectively, we need to get people more excited about these ideas. So these are permanent, eternal, lofty ideals. And not dependent upon any particular person who's out there advocating them.
Well, listen, I want to get people over to fee.org to look around for themselves. What should they look at when they get there? Where would you want to direct them? What's the best step forward that you can take when you're introducing fee to somebody who's new to it?
Well, if you go to fee.org, you'll see a series of tabs. If you want to see where we have some forthcoming events, where fee staff members are speaking, you pull down the events page, and hopefully we'll see some of your listeners at some of those events. If you're a student, high school or college, then in December, start watching for our list of summer seminars, because we post them all in December and take applications through late winter. And that's an important place to go. But every weekday on fee.org, both in the Freeman and in the blog called Anything Peaceful, we have new entries every weekday. They tend to be commentary on current issues or the philosophical underpinnings of freedom. And then we're also very active in social media, too, on Facebook, just as you are, Tom, on Facebook with your page. I have one. Fee has one. One of my goals, Tom, is to someday get close to your count on Facebook.
Well,
I'm way behind.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's and then I watch people. Well, Lou Rockwell has a huge one, and because he has a blog, of course, with many contributors, and I'm way too much of a control freak to let other people contribute to my blog, but he posts them all on Facebook, and it brings still more people over there. And I probably should hire somebody to do my Facebook, but again, I talk about the division of labor, but I don't actually live it. I try to
I'm the same way. I still do all of my own posts every day.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I guess I just for my own sake, and maybe for the sake of those who are libertarian historians out there, historians of the liberty movement, let's close at least saying something about the property. Irvington on Hudson was the place where Fee had its famous mansion, where so many events took place over the years, and that's now been closed, and you guys have moved down south. Can you say a little something about that?
Yes, in fact, it's been only this week that we have finalized that process, and it came about as a result of many years of study and of thought, because the property has always been a great deal to us, and always will, and we'll recreate in Atlanta, Georgia, some of the atmospherics over time once we select our final permanent new headquarters. But we'll recreate some of the atmospherics of the old Irvington Mansion. But the economics of the move really compelled that decision. Just as hardly anybody could tell you that they're still living in the same home in which they were born 70 years ago, they moved on because of opportunities, and we had to do the same. Over the years in Irvington, the village has instructed us that certain uses of the property can't be undertaken anymore because they're not up to certain codes. We could have spent a fortune trying to keep up with those codes and keep up with the maintenance of a 140-year-old building. But then we thought, just think of all that money you could put to better use for programs and publications. So we're cutting our costs dramatically by moving to Atlanta, but we will not forget the heritage of our longtime Irvington ancestral headquarters. It's always meant a lot to us, and the decision to move was not made lightly, but it's one that almost everybody themselves, on a personal level, sooner or later makes.
Well, it is in a way sad to see that come to an end, but you're right that it does make sense to move forward, and we have to do these things from time to time, but the importance is that the message stay the same, which indeed it appears to have done, under the leadership of Larry Reed. And you know, when I introduced you, I was telling people about what you'd done before, and one of the things I mentioned was your work in Michigan, and I correctly pronounced Mackinac Center.
Wow.
So I am also a student of Larry Reed.
Hey, that's great, and I'm a student of Tom Woods, and thank you so much, Tom, for all that you do for Liberty. Every book you put out, I'm one of the first people to order it on Amazon or wherever it's available.
I appreciate that, Larry. Well, best of luck. We'll get people over to fee.org, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody, 2 weeks from tomorrow, my new book comes out, Real Dissent, A Libertarian Sets Fire to the Index Card of Allowable Opinion. 2 weeks from tomorrow, the coolest way to get it, of course, is in the Tom Woods bag of goodies, which you can get as a supporting listener of the show at supportinglisteners.com. You can get the Kindle edition of the book over there. Also, later this year, if I can manage it, I'm going to try to put out a short ebook to be called something like The Woods Guide to Public Speaking. Because I did a quick survey on Facebook. You guys are all on my Facebook page, right? Facebook.com/Thomas E. Woods. And people seem to like that idea. Now, it's not a cure-all. I mean, no book can be a miracle worker. It can't make you an expert public speaker just by reading it. There's no substitute for practice. But still, I think I may have some insights on that subject, and I'm going to give that away also to people who support the show. So, I mean, the bag of goodies is going to burst pretty soon. Wait till you see all the goodies over at supportinglisteners.com. If you're enjoying the show and what I'm up to here and you appreciate it, please check out the Tom Woods Bags of Goodies over at supportinglisteners.com. Tomorrow, Bob Murphy's going to come back and join us once again. He's going to answer those questions you guys have been tweeting using hashtag AskMurphy. By the time you hear this, I will already have talked to Bob, so save your questions for a few weeks from now when we have him on again. But that's who's on the next show. Make sure and catch me next month in New York and in Idaho, in Boise. Details on those events, October 11th and October 25th, respectively, are available at tomwoods.com on the events page, tomwoods.com/events. And of course, for your daily serving of Liberty education, make sure and subscribe to The Tom Woods Show on iTunes or Stitcher, which you can do very easily via the links at tomwoodsradio.com. See you tomorrow, everybody.
The Tom Woods Show.